2A Impulse. It's becoming impossible. Sherlock is alight in such a way Mycroft can only look at him for a few seconds at a time. And Mycroft seems dizzyingly out of reach to Sherlock, though they are sitting next to each other at the dinner table, near enough their knees touch occasionally. They sit across from each other in the library, almost crossing their ankles together. They walk in London in a kitty-corner fashion, one pulling the other along by an invisible chain. Sherlock is 17, and his mind won't be quiet, and neither will his blood. It's fucking keeping him awake at night. So he gives up on sleep for the foreseeable future. He might miss something anyway, and he's only waiting for Mycroft to step too close to him. Mycroft is 24 and should know better. He's known better since before Sherlock was born. And oh bloody hell, he remembers the tiny hand wrapping around his finger. And now, fuck, he stares at the long fingers, images of them molding around him through his trousers, in some darkened corner where they can't get undressed. And Sherlock would make too much noise. He's forever made too much noise, even when he was sitting still. It's becoming untenable, and Sherlock is always demanding, will never stop demanding, because he is the little brother. He expects to get it. He expects everything to be taken care of, regardless of the fact it won't present a challenge. He'll demand and then sulk, and then complicate it until it is a challenge. Sherlock hasn't said a word, not a sudden peep, and yet he demands, sprawled on Mycroft's bed with a book balanced on his stomach, his free hand caught in his hair. He's on Mycroft's bed. He falls asleep there, and Mycroft is left with no alternative but to sleep in Sherlock's, because damn him if he's going to sleep in his own bed with Sherlock there. He almost can't breathe, and it's possible he passes out from lack of oxygen, his lungs taken up with the smell of Sherlock and the faint undercurrents of sweat and sex in the sheets. It's there in Mycroft's eyes, how he brings his hands together, how he's taken to wearing three-piece suits, as if layers will stop Sherlock. Hardly anything stops Sherlock. His brother should know better. And Sherlock laughs to himself. In Sherlock's messy, too-fast handwriting is scrawled a series of chemical equations he has to reduce to a single compound, snap apart the components, identify the catalyst. He refuses to see their present situation in the formulations on the paper. He copied it from Mycroft, who dictated it to him. Another in a string of puzzles from the big brother to the little brother to keep them both happy, and for some reason Sherlock gets stuck as their mother prepares for a fundraising garden party or some such nonsense. There's nothing but noise, 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 inside, outside. It's in his brain and shifting every rail of thought he has, like a devastating earthquake. And he can't take it. He can't concentrate. He can't think. If he can't think, he doesn't exist. And if this is madness, Sherlock is falling headlong. He covers his ears, hunkering in his room, knees drawn to his chest, and his breath is inside his head, rattling around in his skull. He can't think, he can't think, he can't think. A simple fucking equation, something to finish for Mycroft, like those card tricks he learned to do when he was 12. Shuffle, cut the deck, flip the cards, shuffle, track the aces, marry the kings and queens, banish the jacks, slit the hearts and bury the spades. He wanted to fucking impress his brother, and it was stupid. For some reason, the world has decided to hinge upon this one thing, balancing uneasy on his fulcrum, and Sherlock will lose if it falls. Mycroft finds him, curled in a tight ball as the night closes in, the lights from the garden glowing up disjointedly into the windows like long-ago broken glass. Sherlock. Sherlock. He grabs his little brother's wrists, like bird bones, pulling so he can see Sherlock's face, look him in the eye. He kneels like when Sherlock was younger and Mycroft still had something to teach. I can't figure it out. I can see it, Sherlock says. It's there. I know it's there, Mycroft, but it won't coalesce. I can't make the pieces fit together. A sinful confession. His expression miserable and his pupils dilated, as if he can see something beyond Mycroft. They're poised like that for a moment. Then he tilts in Mycroft's grasp and kisses him. And Mycroft opens for Sherlock with a sound that strikes them both clean. They are equals, fighting for dominance, until Mycroft finally presses Sherlock in the mattress, and Sherlock doesn't capitulate so much as offer his throat with an indignant noise, his fingers holding his brother right where he wants him. For once, Mycroft is dressed down, and Sherlock is in his usual loose teenage jeans and big T-shirt, but they're going too fast to think about going slow. They don't make it out of their clothes. The lights outside the window seem to flare every time they blink, and Sherlock bites Mycroft, teeth sinking into his lip. "You're bleeding," he says, voice shut darker, and Mycroft smirks, eyes narrowed, before smearing his mouth along Sherlock's cheekbone, as if Mycroft's been cut by Sherlock's face. Sherlock thinks, "My territory." And Mycroft reads his mind as usual. "It's your fault," Mycroft replies. "Always have to leave a mark, don't you?" They're both overly possessive of their things. The natural extension has been to each other ever since Sherlock was a baby. They've found the other half of their skulls. Mycroft bites him on the neck, hard, with intent to bruise. And Sherlock gasps under the sting and pull of his blood coming up under the skin. They don't stop kissing, possessive, constantly. They're pushing clothes out of the way, no barriers, but it's too fast, happening simultaneously, endless pushes of friction, and their hearts are collapsing in on themselves, and Sherlock intones, "Now," demanding, and he gets it. They're sweaty and sticky, and Mycroft cleans them with Sherlock's shirt. Then he climbs up the bed in the jumbles of his clothes, and Sherlock panics, mouthing, "No, no, 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 no." His mind is jittering, and all he can think is Mycroft is leaving again after all this, with the wind-like murmurings of the party down below. But Mycroft locks the door and braces himself against it, sliding to the floor as if his messy clothes are dragging him down. Mycroft is 24, and Sherlock is 17, and Mycroft watches as Sherlock untangles from the rest of his clothes with his unconscious, easy grace, his naked limbs fluid like the rest of him as he straddles Mycroft, their thighs aligning. Forehead to forehead, they can only see each other cross-eyed. Mycroft says, "What did we do, Sherlock?" Sherlock shakes his head, their dark hair mixing together, and his brother's eyes are like his, but a different shade. "What do we do, Mycroft?" he corrects, fingers spread wide on Mycroft's chest, like he's imitating his ribs, and Mycroft remembers the night, Sherlock saying, "I've been saving this for you." They go back to bed, sprawling, entangled, Sherlock half underneath Mycroft in some sort of temporary accord. They take what they want, indulgent, their minds going blissfully blank for the first time in their lives. They've both done this before, but not with each other, and it hasn't been like this for either of them. It's 2 in the morning, and Mycroft wakes as Sherlock scribbles between his shoulder blades, using the edges of his scapulars as boundaries to contain the chemical equations. He writes the solution on Mycroft's spine. It takes him 15 minutes. I knew you'd suss it out, Mycroft says. Eventually. Sherlock scoffs. Do you think you'll ever stop pointing out the obvious? Mycroft doesn't tell him they've become impossible.